What's up, family? You are tuned into Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. This is Resistance in Residence, where we profile artists using their gifts to change the world. This week's feature is the one, the only, phenomenal CB, a.k.a. Chris Berger, MC, lyricist, producer, community educator, and lifelong student. Welcome to the show, CB.
Yo, CB. What's up, Chad? How you doing?
Ooh. I'm doing good, my G. Doing good. You?
Yeah. I'm doing excellent. I'm filled with joy. I'm feeling good. I'm alive today. I'm on the right side of the soil, so I'm feeling great. So thank you for having me.
I was actually going to put that in the intro, and one of the happiest dudes I know.
And there's a reason for that, right?
And we will get into let's delve. A minute, actually. Chris, I start all my interviews like this. Mm-hmm. Where and how did you grow up? What was your family like?
Wow. Okay. So you're familiar with Pill Hill, right? Over mm-hmm. on Telegraph. That's where I was born. Oakland native. I was raised in Berkeley very shortly. When I was born, I was given away. So I'm Blaxican, Mexican mother, Black father. Mexican family wasn't having the Black child, so I got put up for adoption. Within 2 months, I got snatched up. My family that raised me, Irish, Catholic, German, 9 kids, and they were doing their civic responsibility. They believed to adopt a child of color back in 1969. They snatched me up. I was the youngest of 10. Big family, grew up in Berkeley, a lot of joy in the family. I mean, if you know big families, there's a lot of noise. It's just a lot. And a lot of sports, a lot of competition, not a lot of food. But, growing up in the child of the 70s, you know, in Berkeley and Oakland, this is just a beautiful time. You know, it gets complex because there's a lot of, if you have a bunch of microaggressions, what does that make, right? Major ones. And so it was very confusing for me, yet I really tapped into the joy part of it. I didn't realize the trauma that I was going to endure and until later in life, and until I started dabbling in the substances and the liquor and everything and really trying to cover it up and, you know, came out on the other side. And I could say today I'm doing great. And I have a lot of love for my family. My dad was a really intelligent human being. And my mom, I mean, I can't even talk about my mom without starting to cry, because this woman is so amazing. You know, I wear both their ashes on my neck. They both passed 9 months from each other back in 2019, and they were still married. And, you know, so we went and spread their ashes up in Humboldt County, in the bay, over the rocks, and I kept some, and I wear them on my neck. So I had this really unconditional love for my mother, who was just, how do you have 9 kids, adopt a number 10, and then make that one, and make all the other ones feel so special like she did? She was really magical. She was really instrumental in making me the person I am today. Mm.
Mm-hmm. And yes, is. We know our ancestors walk with us every day. That's a good segue, CB, into my next question, because I was going to ask, like, how being adopted and all of the layers that you just sort of, insinuated on, how did that impact your worldview?
Well, you saw where I gave you the baton with the instrumental line. I went to St. Augustine's on Alcatraz, right there off of Telegraph, as a kid, you know, growing up St. Augustine's, and, you know, I started playing the trumpet there. But all those things made me, if folks remember Berkeley and Oakland and the Bay, you know, back in the 70s when I was coming up, it was very, people would talk to each other. You walk up Telegraph, and I think I told you this before, a player I knew, instrument player, Gassim, he would call Telegraph the Iron River. And I would go, what does he mean by that? But it was like this flow, right? And he lived at 40th back. We're talking back in the 80s and 90s, right? Back when 40th and Telegraph was still funky. And then that flow. And so the community raised the children. You know, you're out in the streets. There is no this type of technology that we have today. And so you're out in the streets all the time from morning till dark. You know, you go to school, but it's like you're out in the streets playing, you know, soccer, football. I was a roller skater, so I hit the streets. I was skating all the streets of Berkeley. And so when you talk about worldview, you're talking about the community raising you, right? And then I was just like, that was me being normal, like being adopted in this big old family. And so I was welcoming to everybody. But for me, the most important thing was if I saw someone that didn't fit in, I was always seeking that person to see what was up and try to make them feel welcome. Because that was my whole reality, not feeling like I fit in.
CB, aka Chris Berger, you are a respected, renowned, hailed MC and lyricist. Do you remember when you discovered hip hop? The moment you knew you wanted to be an MC?
I think you know, hearing Double Dutch Bus was like crazy for me. You know, I grew up on a lot of like, you know, a lot of rock. And when I found Hendrix, that was like my thing. You know, I used to wear the bandana and I thought I was Jimmy. I just couldn't play the guitar. I was playing trumpet. I wasn't that dope. I tried playing out, but Jimmy was my everything. James Marshall, Johnny Allen Hendrix was my everything. Stevie Wonder really touched me a certain way. Santana, you know, all these different groups. But when I heard Double Dutch Bus, I was like, oh man. And then I went to the Fresh Fest with Mr. E and my buddy Matt. This was like 1985 or 86. Houdini, Run DMC, LL Cool J, Beastie Boys, and Atomic Social Club had Rumors. And I knew those dudes had gone to my high school. So I was like, wow, it's real. So I started writing my raps. And, you know, being a child of a kid of Berkeley, I started partying in eighth and ninth grade, right? And I had, you know, a family member that was in and out of Rita quite a bit, making my mom cry and my dad mad. And it just, I didn't want to follow that. And I was going down that same road, you know, eighth and ninth grade. This is young. I was 12 and 13. And so I decided, man, I don't want to do that. So I became a distance runner. I'd always been a runner, but like a soccer player, you know, you run a lot on the soccer field, and I was a swimmer. But I decided I would quit the dumb, and that meant the substances. It's really early to be doing that stuff, eighth and ninth grade, 12 and 13 years old. But that's when, you know, I was looking at the neighborhood. Everyone else is doing it. And so becoming a runner, I needed something to do. So, you know, Kat, you know me, I got all this energy. So I was like, go to Fresh Fest, seeing Atomic Social Club, seeing Houdini. I just love Ecstasy's voice. Now the Houdini's inside the joint. He just had that MC voice. And I was like, whoa, and Run DMC. And of course, Dougie Fresh and Slick Rick. I'm really a golden era of hip hop MC. You know, I just love that because you're saying something. You're doing edutainment, as my favorite MC, KRS-One, says. But that's what I started doing. I was running and I was making raps. And when you're a runner, you know, I was running 70 miles a week. You have to establish a breathing pattern when you run. And so I'd breathe beats and write in my head. Tour de France was one that I liked. You know, ha, 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 ha. You know, it's kind of funny to run like that, but you know, that's like really the secret to running. You just establish a breathing pattern, get your center of gravity right, and lean forward a bit, and you're okay. But at this age now, you're hoping that your body's okay and can handle the pounding on the pavement. But I suggest people run on dirt and sand instead. But that's when it hit me, going to that Fresh Fest and then just starting writing raps.
CB, in what ways do you believe hip hop has the power to impact political, social, and cultural fabrics of community? In what way is it a form of resistance?
I think it originated, I love that question, right? I'm pretty sure your signature on your email is pretty similar to that, right? Just my existence is being free, right? So you start with that, and we'll get into what Love Phenomena is, my love project, right?
It's
What
on
that is.
deck. The question is
Yeah,
on
I
deck. We getting there. I'm getting there. I'm
know.
getting there.
Tease it, but just the existence, first of all, how do you present yourself to the world? But you got to present yourself to yourself first, right? So what do you put in your body? That means you know, substances, liquids, the foods we eat, the media we intake, all these different things that lead us to be the person that we present ourselves in the world. Now, hip hop, as I learned it, was from Chuck D for Public Enemy, Rakim, KRS-One, right? So you had to be saying something. You had to contribute something to the movement, right? You had to be offering your unique personal perspective on a world view or on your neighborhood view or on your, you know, your area view of what's going on. And then you put it in a way in like Jamaicans, Rastas, they're masters of this in reggae. You know, it's not what you say, it's how you say it. So emceeing in hip hop is really what you say too and how you say it. So I think that doing that, when you spend your time and you sit down, or in my case, I walk when I write, that's my process as I walk. And it's really downloading it from the ether, but also what you've taken in when your communications with your loved ones, with people you meet, people you work with, people you service, right? Because that's a big thing. You have to get out of self. When for me personally, when I'm having issues or I'm sad or this, that, why do you think I'm so happy? Because I go and do service. And through service, you get outside of help. But I think hip hop itself, hip hop as we know it, as we grew in it, and what we believe, you know, the golden era, being conscious, that's what it's supposed to be. To know and to move. Hip hop.
Well, since you brought it up, I've bumped it up on the question list. Talk to us about the Love Phenomena Project. Mm.
Okay, Kat, now we're going deep. You know, I spoke earlier about the growing up, and it's so joyful, big family. Also, it's you'll hear me not trying to say the word, but I don't like saying that word, right? So it's joyful, this and that. Also, very confusing, and I retreated into my own a lot because I was very confused. Why was I giving away this and that, right? And so 5 years ago, 5 or 6 years ago, I found my birth family. And thanks to P.O., Jill Guerra, Claire Berger, you know, some other folks, Regina, they helped me find my family. And so that like completed a lot of the questions I had. And I actually have I do some songs with my biological brother, Rodney, right? Who grew up in East Oakland. He was adopted to a black family in East Oakland. He makes slumpers. Me and him do beats together and I love him. But I think around 2008, a lot of my issues came to the fore. I really just couldn't do it on my own, battling substances and liquor and stuff. And I tried many times and, you know, I pulled a Geographic. I moved to the East Coast. I had an opportunity. We were doing after parties for the Grateful Dead's 2009 or the Dead's 2009 tour. We had a mashup. We were called the Band of Brothers, or we are called the Band of Brothers, mashup of dance hall, Jamaican, hip hop, and Dead music. And I had an opportunity to move out there after the tour and get sober. And getting sober wasn't a nudge from the judge, which I had had a couple times in the past, which means, you know, you go before the judge and then you get to start going to some AA, right? And get your card signed. You have to really feel that bottom. And, you know, I'm very open about this stuff because I think if I could say this to people who are having a difficult time out there and they could know, wow, it could be done. That's why I'm so happy, because I've come on the other side and I feel pain. I feel sadness. I feel again. And so there's a difference between happy and being clueless and corny, right? And coming back, I had to come back home, right? After getting sober about a year and a half there. And, you know, I've maintained that. It was August 24th, my last drink in Harlem at the Lenox Lounge, August 23rd, 2009. And August 24th was my first day of sobriety. And so coming back home, I said, I want to do music, but approach it differently now. I actually love myself. I've always loved my people, but it's disjointed if I don't love myself. If I can't present to you self-love, then I'm doing both of us a disservice. So I had to love myself, but the process and how I got sober and how I stay sober is all about service. You have to help the next alcoholic. Alcohol led me to drugs. So that's why I didn't go to NA. I can go to NA, Narcotics Anonymous, but it was really AA because that was my gateway. And now, you know, I have a great sponsor, Renee. I have a grand sponsor. I love Jordy. I have a sponsee, right? And we all go to the same meeting. And is whatever that sounds like to you, trust, it is the most beautiful experience when I'm in that room and these brothers, all brothers, are sitting there being vulnerable, loving each other. I mean, this is going to, I got to stop for a second because it's intense. It's intense. You know, I tell you, I might cry when I talk about my mom, but when I just said that about these brothers, that it's really a beautiful thing. So, you know, Love Phenomena was built, I was born of that. You know, I got to have this self-love before I could present myself to the world. And now comes the joy, right? Now comes Kenny Brooks sending beats, Al Marshall, Dre Marshall, Keith MacArthur, Lady Chi singing, vinyl submitted, Zoe Ellis, Troy Lampkins, Dred Scott, Wilbur Krebs, Sammy Big Ups, Mike Blake, Jay Lane, Sonara Pippin, Sonara Fulmore, you know, Josh Lubinsky, who's been so instrumental in helping produce the project. And then, you know, my guy, the guidance, when Karis One used to say Scott LaRock, he's in here. That's Zachariah Mose. Zachariah Mose, I love this guy so much. He passed also around that same time that my parents passed. And he's the best producer I ever had. He was my partner in Rhyme, initially in Alphabet Soup, right before Blake. And this individual, this gentleman, this human, this spirit, he taught me so many things about music. And, you know, he's in there. But we have like Larry and Jamal Peoples, Tony Lindsay, Norbert Satchel, Luke Mann. And then let me just say, Eric EQ Young, my biological cousin, who I met, this bad bass player, right? Angeline Saris, Cam, who mixes and masters and plays guitar. Norbert Satchel, who threw sax on it. And then your boy, I'm just going to say Davey D. I'm not going to give any other descriptor because we'll start laughing. I'm doing fine with Davey, right? And so it's
that's
like,
dope.
That's the love phenomena. We're bringing people in and say, hey, you know, here's this cat. He loves himself again. He always loved community, but I'm writing so much because I walk all the time. I wrote during COVID, I think over 150 songs, and I can't get them out quick enough. Right.
I was going to get into that. Like, you've been putting out an insane amount of music. How many albums and how much time and what's the drive?
So this year I turned a special age, which is 55. I also turned 15 years sober. Mm. And I said, hey, you know, I'm born on the autumn equinox, right? I'm a Kwanzaa baby. I'm the first fruit, right? And so I was like, hey, you know, why don't I just call this project? How about we? I want to get out of the eye. I and I would like to get out of the eye. So we decided, let's do one. Let's call it Equinox Solstice. So each equinox, each solstice, we're going to release something. So Josh, our producer, was like, hey, you know, let's put out this stuff. And I was like, well, you know, he wants to do this album about some of my darker things, you know, my experiences. And I said, I'm kind of past that. And he really influenced me. And I said, okay. So we call it Dark Side of the Boom. And that came out on the spring equinox. And on the summer solstice, Damian Gallegos, you know Damian through Boots. They do a lot of the coup together. Damian's got a studio like two blocks from where I live in West Oakland. And I ran into Amelia, his partner, one day. I was like, she's like, how come you're not making beats with Damian? I'm like, man, I figure he's busy with Boots. She's like, no, Boots is doing movies. I'm like, oh, shoot. Yo, D, what's up? And so we did we have two releases. So we did the summer solstice, CBDG, because he's Damian Gallegos, I'm Chris Berger. So CBDG came out on 6/21. We did a tiny garage over at David and Maddie's place on Adeline. That's in my neighborhood too, Town Cycles. And then my birthday, we released Love Phenomena Volume 2. And then this week on the 21st of December, we will release CBDG Volume 2. And so what we'll do is lovephenomena.com, that's L-U-V, phenomena, right, .com, will give away a compilation of those releases, probably starting, I hope, you know, when this first airs. So let's do it on the 16th. And so that leads me to say I give away most of my music. I want to give it out, right? So there's something we say in my program is you can't keep it unless you give it away. So I got a job. That's why I can afford it.
Look at you segueing into my next. First of all, you answered like three questions I didn't have to ask you. But I'm glad we have some time left because I did want to pivot to you being a community educator. How does that manifest in your life?
That was from that old song, I got a job. What your job got to do with me? Right. It was a different, but so my passion.
It still works.
Yeah. And that's the thing though, because my passion is teaching people digital literacy. And I have a thing that I say, you know, MCs, rappers, we all love words and letters. And I have this thing I say, ha tech YTD. And ha is hungry and humble. Tech is if you're getting an email, do you trust it? Are you expecting it? Do you know this person? T-E-K. And then YTD is you're in control. Take your time. Right. And as Flavor would say, don't trust it. Right. And so I teach digital literacy. I run a program for one of the largest affordable housing nonprofits in California and Hawaii. And I'm the technology program manager there, and we run digital literacy programs throughout the portfolio. I've had this program at 54 of our 230 sites. And so to date, in the last 6 years, we've taught digital literacy and graduated over 3,000 individuals. And this is from transitional age youth to seniors to mixed family to veterans, special needs, all these different folks, clients that we serve. And then I also do it for free in the community. I'm part of AfroLit, and we do events at Lakefest in the Tech Zone at Lake Merritt every year at Lakefest. And then we do it at Laney College sometimes. We do it at the Garden Center outside of Lakefest. And then our next one is going to be, I think it's in January 11th at Berkeley City College, Berkeley Community College. And that's through AfroLit. January 11th at Berkeley City College. Here's the cool thing. We're starting something called LCI Tech, Lauren Community Innovation Technology Entrepreneurship Center, right where Inner City Services used to be at Adeline and Alcatraz. My brother, Jamal Malik, from Berkeley High, who I ran track with, you know, track was my big thing. Jamal, I ran into him one day. He is responsible for getting me into tech. So I love you, Jamal, man. Thank you. He created this whole world for me. And then Willie Lockett, you know, Sabir, right? Sabir's pops. Willie is my mentor. And so I met this other brother from Kansas City who started Aisteen Village in Kansas City, Missouri. What they're doing out there in Kansas City, we're going to replicate a couple of their models here in Berkeley, Oakland border. And this is how do we serve the community with financial literacy, digital literacy, health and wellness, job training and soft skills. So I'll be on the job training, soft skills and digital literacy part. But it's really, how can I live this life unless I give away that which was given to me? That's how I still live.
For my listeners who may not know what digital literacy is and why it's so important, let them know.
Yeah, I was a lifelong cable guy. That was my hustle, you know, besides that other hustle stuff I did. right? And which you don't get a 401k, right? No health
retirement plan.
Right, none of that.
Health insurance.
Right. And so I got hurt on the job as a cable guy. I had gone in-house to one of the companies. I was mostly a contractor so I could go back on tour doing music. And I would knock doors and climb poles. I would say, hey, yo, you want cable? You do? Let me climb the pole and hook you up. Right. And then I'd go in-house and work for the company. As I got hurt on the job, they tried to retrain me. I had a great interview to retrain me to be a totally different position, which was like a desk position. But I failed miserably on Microsoft PowerPoint. I was in a totally different platform. And, you know, I was in Word doing this PowerPoint presentation, and that stuck in my craw. And I was like, okay, well, let me go to Berkeley Adult School. Shout out to Alfred Miller, who was my first instructor and gave me the drive and the passion and really fostered that in me. And so I went from there to I talked about my bro, Jamal, who got me into the Stride Center, 12th and Broadway, downtown Oakland. And so that was my foray into digital literacy. Digital literacy is the ability, I like to use the word river to harken back to what we were talking about before, the Spanish word rios, resources, information, opportunity, and services. How do we access these things in this day and age, right? I love people, Kat, you know me, I want a one-on-one. I want to go up into the office and talk to somebody and, you know, but now everything's moved online, right? And COVID really, really exacerbated it, right? And so what had happened to me, what I went to the DMV to redo some, you know, some, and I'm the 11th person in line. All of a sudden I get up to the front of the line. They go, oh, go use that computer monitor in that workstation. I'm like, but you're right here. They're like, yeah, but you got to go over there. Well, I had started taking classes. Next thing I know, I'm in the first person line because I was comfortable with that computer and that workstation. The other 10 people that were in front of me were still, you know, banging on the keyboard and talking to it. And so I have that unique recent history or historical perspective to say, hey, you know, 8 years ago, soon to be 9 years, I was you. Now I know. So I could, except when you're teaching, it's really, you know, advisable to teach at a third grade level, right? Know your audience. And so I always have somebody jump up in my classes. Oh, well, I know this. And they want to test me. I was like, great. You're going to be the teacher, right? I said, this is so great to know that you're here, that we could lean on you, right? And so now you have something that'll help the rest of the class. So you got to really feel out your class and talk to them. And I tell them, I say, you're going to teach me things. We're going to learn together. And that goes back to that hungry and humble. But that's life. That's music. Hungry and humble, right? I couldn't play the trumpet, so I became an MC. I'm not the best MC, so I work really hard at it. And so I'm really, really good because I work really, really hard. I'm always doing music. Every day you're either rehearsing, you're writing, you're creating, you're doing some sort of the publishing or the business aspect of it, or you're doing service. You have to do something that pushes forward, or you're intaking data. Like I like to read, right? Thanks to KPFA, I know about Gabo and Mate. You know, I'm reading The Myth of Normal now, right? So, and it's telling me everything about myself. But you got to have that input, right, to do the output.
All right, CB, I'm about to have to wrap it up. But for folks that have listened to this interview, I'm like, I want to know more about this dude, hear more of this dude. You've mentioned Band of Brothers, Love Phenomena, there's Alphabet Soup. Where else can people find you? And then throw out the Love Phenomena website.
Yeah, again. LoveFenomena.com, Love Phenomena on Instagram. Come see us, the World One Festival, July 4th in El Cerrito. We'll be headlining. Sister Nancy's going to be on the bill. Shout out to Corey and Dev, Sue. Thank you for that. We're going to be at Jupiter in Berkeley, April 19th, in celebration of, you know, my favorite herb, 420. You know, I don't smoke, I don't drink, but I appreciate all the essences. You know, I love people and I give them love. But we're going to be bigging up BAM House and APTP, I believe, on January 17th, downtown Oakland.
Yeah, it's King Week. Yep.
Yes. Doctor. But yeah, please visit us online. If you email the website, lovephenomena.com, that's LUVphenomena.com, it's going to go to me. So yeah, come holler at me. And then come see us over there at LCI Tech at Alcatraz and Adeline when we open up in the new year. And then also at Berkeley City College on January 11th of 2025 to come bring your youth. We're servicing the community. We want to exchange ideas and data. And please look up, folks. Get off the phones. Look up. Look up and breathe. And what do I say, CB? Hydrate. If I give you one thing, breathe and hydrate. We do this medicine music, so please breathe and hydrate.
Breathe and hydrate. Powerful words to end on. All right. CB, aka Chris Berger, MC, lyricist, producer, community educator, and lifelong student. Thank you so much for joining us today.
One love, one love.
You've been listening to Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. That's it for this episode, family. Law and Disorder is produced at KPFA, that's listener-supported radio on the Pacifica Network. The show is produced by Jesse Strauss and hosted by me, Kat Brooks. Our theme music was composed by Steve Raskin of Fort Knox 5. Our Resistance and Residence theme music was composed by Jesse Strauss. If you like what you heard, please follow us on social media at Law and Dis. And subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also find our content live at 8 a.m. weekdays on KPFA. That's 94.1 FM in the Bay Area. Our show and all KPFA's programs are funded exclusively by you, the listeners. If you're in a position to support us, please donate today at kpfa.org. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. We all we got, fam.